So Rav Sadja Gaon tells us that there are many people who say that it's kfira and apikorsis comes out of using intellect. It's much better to just sit back, accept from your forefathers, from your rabbis, that Hashem exists, that the world was created, that God doesn't have a body, and that Hashem's the person that we're supposed to be praying to. All of these major foundations in Jewish philosophy. So just accept them. You don't use your mind to try to figure them out to prove. But Rav Sadja Gaon, as we pointed out, tells us that the beauty of mankind is that he was given a mind. And mankind wasn't given a mind only so that he could figure out quantum physics or how to build a George Washington Bridge. Man's mind was given so that he can use it to try to perceive God and to understand Hashem and understand how Hashem created the world. And therefore he tells us, very, very important to use the mind. Oh, there are those who say that this leads to kfira. So he says there are also people who say that anyone who goes to India becomes rich. Certainly there were some people who went to India and became rich, but not everyone who goes to India becomes rich. So too, Rav Sadja Gaon tells us, not everybody who studies philosophy becomes a kofer or an apikores, a heretic. If you don't approach philosophy properly, so then it could lead to heresy. So how do you avoid arriving at heresy, at kfira? He says that our form of philosophy is different than secular philosophy. Our form of philosophy is predicated on our Mesorah. Remember, Rav Sadja Gaon told us that there are three intellectual sources of intellect, three basic sources of intellect. There's observation, there's inference, there's intuition. Those were the three sources of knowledge that Rav Sadja Gaon pointed towards. And a fourth one that we believe in is what? The Mesorah. We have an Eidus from our fathers and our forefathers, all the way back from Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. All of us stood at Har Sinai. We have a Mesorah about who Hashem is and what Torah is and what Emes is. And we believe that that's also a credible source. And Rav Sadja Gaon suggests that when one is using his intellect to try to figure out God, he does it on the background of the Mesorah. He does it within the general context of Mesorah. And to bring out this point, and this is what Rav Sadja Gaon says, already back in the 900s, that that's the difference between how we approach philosophy and how they approach philosophy. And their approach of philosophy leads to kfira. And ours doesn't, and quite the opposite. It's what we're supposed to be doing, and it's what leads us to true emunah. Remember the Rambam we spoke about last week, that the Rambam says, the mitzvah is not lahamin, but rather what? Leida. To know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists. To know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists only comes if you use your mind and start to figure out, well, how can I prove that to myself? So in order to flesh out Rav Sadja Gaon a little bit, I want us to take a look at something from Rav Simcha Zissel, the Saba Mikelm. This is on the photocopy sheet here, from the Sefer Chochma U'Musar. Okay? Rav Simcha Zissel was a Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanter. Rav Yisrael Salanter is known to us as the father of the Musar movement. Rav Yisrael Salanter's Talmud, Rav Simcha Zissel, writes in his Sefer Chochma U'Musar, he has a section here, section Sadi Vav, 96, Lahavin Ha'emuna, which is already a funny topic, to understand faith. Because one would think that faith is faith. Faith is just believing. What do you mean to believe, to understand faith? What intellectual element is there to faith? You would think faith just means to believe. And we know that there are many religions, from the countries that most of us are from. So the dominant religion is a religion that is completely based on faith. Just believe. Forget about mitzvahs. Believe. Faith is what's important. What does Rav Simcha Zissel tell us? He tells us, look at the brackets, Matzinu Yisod Eitzel HaFilosafim. It's amazing. This was written 150 years ago. It's the same exact thing as Rav Sadja Gaon said. We find the Yisod by the philosophers. Haba lumod chachmas philosophia, omrim lo, hashlech me'alacha kol ma sheshamata. Discard everything you ever knew, ad hayom. V'hetchil lachkor b'sichlecha, and start using your mind. And we said that I'm pretty much 100% confident that he's referring here to Descartes. And if not to Descartes specifically, but to what Descartes wrought, what he brought to the world. Descartes lived in the 1600s, he's the father of Western philosophy. And Western philosophy teaches, as you showed, modern philosophy teaches as their basic premise that you must throw off any preconceived notion. Forget everything you ever knew. Start from scratch. And he says, that's what philosophers tell you. He says, however, V'zeh soser l'chol pinos haTorah. This is a complete and utter rejection of everything the Torah tells us. What? Forget everything you ever knew? Ki yisod hadat el al haKabbalah. We, our religion, is based so much on our tradition, on our Masorah. Aval yesh gam kein makom l'zeh. But there is room for Descartes, even for a Jewish religious thinker. How is that so? So he tells us, Ha'inyin ki yesh gimel emunos. There are three types of faith. Number one, the pesi, the fool, who's yamin l'chol davar, v'zeh chisaron gadol. The first fool, who just believes everything that he hears. Just believes everything, he's gullible. That's number one. Number two, yesh eno mamin rak mash sichlo yira ve'eno yeid alav. This is a very important classification. What's the second group? Somebody who only believes that which he himself can verify. The Ramban writes that this was Aristotle's mistake and all the Greek philosophers who followed after him. They refused to accept that there might be truths that are beyond their comprehension at their current stage. Right now, I'm 19 years old, I don't understand something, it's not true. What? What are you talking about? You're only 19. If I don't understand it, it's not true. That's the second type of person. V'zeo gam kein sichlus gedola. Ki das ha'odam ketana. People are very weak-minded. You think because you can't understand something, it's not true? And we all don't act that way. We get onto a plane. We're not all experts in aerodynamics. We step onto a plane. Why would you trust your life onto a flying coffin? You get in there, they close it, you can't get out. You have no idea why it stays up in the air. It's so heavy. You don't understand aerodynamics. But yet you live your life, you go on a plane. None of us really, really live this way. But so many people, when it comes to religion, what? God really cares about every single thing that happens to me? I don't believe that. That's not true. Who are you? That's what Rav Simcha Zissel tells us. That's the second type of person. He only believes that which he thinks he himself can verify. Aval, you know what I always think of? It's like the guy who sits in on Einstein's class. Sits in on Einstein's shiur, Einstein's lecture. And, you know, Einstein makes references to certain things that he just doesn't really understand. And he comes out, he goes, what a fool, that old guy. You know what he was talking about? It didn't make sense, anything that he said. What's obviously the MS here? Who didn't understand? You, the 19-year-old who barely knows physics? Or Einstein who's giving the lecture? You're lacking in a lot of information. It makes sense that you didn't understand everything that he said. What's section number three? Hamimutza, in between. Lahavin b'seichel b'ra'ayot he'emunah l'ha'min b'kabbalah. V'haynu ha'kabbalah shi benuya al. We'll get there in one second. He says, what's the best way to study philosophy? To use the tradition as a backdrop, and based on that backdrop, begin to try to understand where that fits into your life. Our Kabbalah, our Masorah, he says, is based on two things. Al, number one, miforsamos. Miforsam means what? Public. Things that are out in the public. There were certain things that occurred that were done in public. And we're going to get back to this in a second. But he says, like in our religion, like Yetzias Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf, Achilas Mon. These are miracles that took place out in public. Everybody saw them. Our religion is very heavily based on these events that took place in public that everybody saw. Number two, Nisyonos. What's Nisyonos? Our past. Our record. The fact that we are still able to exist after everything that's happened to us. He makes a reference here. Like one little sheep that's surrounded by dozens and dozens of wolves, and yet somehow, against all nature and against all odds, that sheep continues to exist. These two things, Rav Simcha Zissel tell us, are the foundation of our tradition. Number one, before Samos, events that occurred in public that everybody saw. And number two, the historical fact that we continue to exist is one of the greatest proofs, right? This is famous Mark Twain's essay on the Jews, where he asks, what's the secret of the Jew, that the Jew continues to exist? But way before Mark Twain lived, so the Rishonim wrote about it way before Mark Twain. The fact that through Gullus after Gullus after Gullus we're able to exist is completely beyond all scientific explanation. These two things, he tells us, form the basis of our Kabbalah. And now, what should we do? Now that you've accepted those two realities, now what do? Based on that, you begin your intellectual inquiry. Like, for instance, let's say you wanted to understand aerodynamics. So Descartes would say, okay, so throw away everything. You don't know that planes work. There are these wings on the sides of planes that seem to have something to do with the plane getting up in the air. Forget that. You don't know about that. There are engines. You don't know about that. Throw that all away. So
Simcha Zissel says that's crazy. That's the way you're going to try to figure out aerodynamics. You're never going to get anywhere. You're doubting whether the planes that all the planes that seem to fly all have wings and all have engines. But you say, nope, I got to start from scratch. I'm throwing everything away. I want to figure out how things fly, how to make a flying thing. So you're never going to get anywhere. But he says the way you do it is you look at what we have already that's so grounded. Wings, engines, long runway. Anyone who's trying to figure out how things fly should work with the things that are already very clear to us. Now, Simcha Zissel says the same thing. The way that we don't end up leading towards kfira is because we begin with the things that we know are true because of our tradition. We don't discard tradition. We work with tradition. And what's the goal? I wrote this in on the bottom, but I think part of it got cut off. Based on them, the Meforsemos and the Nisyonos, we use our mind in order to try to reach a level where we perceive the MS and we reach a point where we don't need the tradition anymore. We use the tradition. In other words, like, let's go back to our mushel. You begin with the knowledge you know already. You know that runways, wings, engines are all important, seemingly, to get a plane up in the air. So now you study aerodynamics. You figure it out based on that information. And now you don't need that tradition anymore because now you really understand aerodynamics. And now it's pashut that you need a wing because you understand how aerodynamics works. And he says that's the way that a person should study Jewish philosophy. And this elaboration here in Chachma U'Mussar, just 100 years ago, is what Rav Saad Gaon is saying here in paragraph 9. That our form of analysis is different because we do it based on our tradition. It's something I think is very, very important, this duality of, on the one hand, accepting the tradition, but on the other hand, trying to be an independent thinker and interplaying between those two. I don't know if I heard this someplace, but I think I heard it because it's something that I remember from being from much younger. One of my first understandings in Shemona Esrei. We begin Shemona Esrei, we say, Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu. And what is that? Elokeinu, my God, our God, v'Elokei Avoseinu. And I think also that those two terms are reflecting this duality. On the one hand, we want God, and that's the ultimate, that's what we start with. We want God to be Elokeinu, our God, my God. My God that I understand and I have a relationship with. I don't believe in God, I don't daven to Him just because my parents did. He's my God, Elokeinu. He's our, each one of our own individually. But He's also Elokei Avoseinu. This duality of working both with the tradition and being an independent inquirer on my own, that's a very, very important balance that we need to strike. The Mabit, which is on the other side of the page here, the Beis Elokim. The Mabit was a contemporary of Yosef Karo, which means we're talking like very end of the Rishonim, very early Achronim. Yosef Karo obviously wrote the Shulchan Aruch. The Beis Elokim, the Mabit, was a contemporary. He lived in Sfat. And he wrote a very, very important sefer that's not studied so often, but a very, very important basic sefer in Machshava called the Beis Elokim. And he adds here in the underlined part, I'm not going to read it inside right now, but he adds a very, very important reason, another reason why it's so important to work with the Masorah when you're doing intellectual inquiry. What he says here is, and I think it was pointed out to me last year, the beauty of working with the tradition is, and this is how he suggests, first, accept the tradition. Accept the Masorah. Then, once you've accepted it and you know that it's true, then begin throwing things away and trying to understand and using your mind. And if you do it that way, when you reach a dead end, when something doesn't make sense to you, you'll be able to fall back on the Masorah that you have, which is your grounding, which is your foundation. I remember once, after taking a course in astronomy, so I was very interested always in reading what was going on in the Science Times to see what was going on with the latest astronomical findings, NASA, what they were finding up in the skies. I was into that for a little bit. And I remember when they found the new galaxy that was, I forgot how many light years away. And if you know anything about light years, so you know that also is measuring time. And if the calculations were correct, it meant that the galaxies that were being observed with the telescopes were millions of years old. And I remember having questions, Amuna questions. What? Millions of years old? How old is the universe? These types of questions. And I remember I asked my Rebbe at the time, Rav Meir Twersky. I asked a few different people. Some professor, rabbi professors, some Rosh Yeshiva. I asked a bunch of different people this question. And I remember when I spoke to Rabbi Twersky about it, It was in the context of another discussion. Soloveitchik writes in the introduction to one of his essays that he was never bothered by questions like how old is the universe and these types of questions that seem to plague a lot of modern Orthodox minds. And Soloveitchik said that it never bothered him, these questions. And I never knew, like, why didn't it bother him? It bothers me. That seems to be like such a great question. All of these contradictions between science and Torah, why don't they bother him? So I asked Rav Tversky about this, and Rav Tversky said that he thinks a person should only start analyzing these things when he knows the MS of Torah to a degree where it's so central to who he is that all of these questions become, I believe the term he used was, intellectual gymnastics. But Rav Tversky said that for the Rav, the MS of Torah was so barur, was so clear to him, even the greatest question was always just a question. It was intellectual acrobatics if he could figure out the answer to the question. But the question didn't shake his emunah because his whole enterprise of trying to figure these things out was based on a firm belief in the emunah. And that's what I think the Beis Elokim here is saying. That before you start with the philosophic analysis, it has to begin by having a grounding and a solid belief in our emunah. Now, if that's what Rav Sajagon just said in paragraph 9, so the obvious question is, well, where does our emunah come from? Why is it that we have emunah? And that was already addressed a little bit here by Chachma Musar, but I'm not going to read it inside again, but here in paragraph 10, we have a very, very famous, perhaps the most famous section, few lines in Emunos Fideos from Rav Sajagon. Rav Sajagon says, and this is the conspiracy theory proof for the MS of Torah, for the truth of Torah, Rav Sajagon says he thinks that the greatest proofs to Torah are the public, this is what Rav Simcha Zissel referred to as the Mefursamos, the public expressions or manifestations of God. And the greatest one, he says, he thinks is Mun. The Mun in the desert. Why is the Mun, Rav Sajagon says, the greatest proof for God? He says, because here you have 1 million people in the desert. Obviously, if you have 1 million people in the desert, they need food. And it's not easy to feed people. If the Mun didn't happen, imagine really we didn't have money. Really we had a bakery with us and animals that we were shechting all the time and we had gardens where we were growing vegetables. So what's going to happen? How do you start the lie? The great big lie, the big conspiracy. How does that begin? One person says, or everyone gets together and says, okay, from now on we're going to tell everybody that we were really fed from the skies. All of these fields that we have and all these animals that we're shechting and the bakery that we have set up, none of this stuff is really providing food for us. So he said, well, what's going to happen? All of the kids, all the next generation, right? You try to pass on to the next generation the big lie. So the kids are going to say, well, what about all of those animals that we had? What about all of the fields and the gardens that we had? Sajagon says it's a tremendous, tremendous challenge to pull off a conspiracy. Try amongst your friends to take 5 people and to one to each other say, we're going to pull off a big lie. Like, we're going to say that, you know, at 10, 20, in the middle of the shiur, like this green lizard, huge lizard came down behind, huge, as size as the wall, and then he just disappeared. Imagine we all tried to pull that off. So, and not only did we try to pull off this lie, but we actually needed to live our life based on that. Like every day everyone had to sacrifice $500 to the lizard god because of that. And we went on and we started to teach our families. Like every day everyone's got to sacrifice $500 to the great green lizard god of Ulam Echad that came down at 10:20, right? So what's going to happen? You're going to have a kid, your son. You know, you might pull it off at first, but you have a son who's a little bit low on cash. It's going to be very hard for him to cough up that $500 next week. And you say, I just want to tell you something. That whole lizard thing, it didn't really happen. We were all lying. Try to pull off a conspiracy with 10 people, 15 people. We all know that once there's a secret out, yeah, this guy tells his girlfriend, and this one tells his friend, this one tells his son, this one tells us, oh, that whole thing didn't really happen. We weren't really fed by magical mun for 40 years in the desert. We actually had food. And all the kids were brought up in the generation. They all know the lie. All you need is one idealistic guy to say, I'm not standing for this lie. We had fields and we had animals. And what about all of the actual data? The fields. And this, Rav Sajagon says, he thinks, is such a tremendous proof. Because you can't pull off a lie with 1 million people. In fact, it's very interesting. Judaism is one of 2 religions that claims public revelation. Public revelation. Most religions are begun. Most religions start with
One person saying, I had a vision, I had a dream, I had some type of vision that it came to me, and God told me to tell you all the following. That's how almost all religions began. There is another tribal religion that began with a group of people receiving group revelation. The only problem is that because of that huge revelation, they all died from the experience except for one guy. And he was able to tell over the group revelation that everybody had. So obviously that's not really much different than one person having a revelation. If everyone else died, all the other witnesses died. But Judaism is the only religion that claims that a million people saw something and passed down from generation to generation to generation. Somewhere someone's going to say, by the way, that whole thing, the whole thing was a lie. This is spoken out by Rav Sajigon here in paragraph 10. And this is what Rav Simcha Zissel is referring to as the Mefursamos. You'll notice in there he makes reference to the Mon. That's based on Rav Sajigon. He also had learned Rav Sajigon in Munos Videos. And this is, for Rav Sajigon, a major basis for the truth of our religion. But what has emerged from Rav Sajigon and from our learning of Rav Sajigon is that there are two sources of knowledge, two sources of emuna, excuse me, two sources of faith. One is using your intellectual capabilities to understand God, and the second one is the Mesorah. When we do intellectual study, we do it on the context of the Mesorah. But we also can rely just on the Mesorah. Why is it, Rav Sajigon asks, that Hashem gave us a Mesorah if our minds are powerful enough to comprehend God? I think the answers are obvious. Number one, it takes time. It takes a whole lifetime of working on these philosophic understandings to get a perception of God. That's number one. And number two is that not everybody's a philosopher. Not everyone's going to dedicate their life to try to understand God and to perceive God. And for those people, they need to have a Mesorah to rely on. And we all know, some of us are more philosophically interested. We're interested in these questions. And other people say, you know what? If it was good for my parents, it was good for my Rebbe, it was good for my friends, it's good for me. So not everybody's ready to be a philosopher. What I think is tremendously vital to learn from Rav Sajigon is the importance of doubt. And that is that doubt is not a scary thing. Doubt is just the function of not having finished the process yet. It takes time to figure all of this out. And until a person does that, he's going to have doubt. Doubt is just natural. I want to move from here as we sort of wrap up our discussion of Rav Sajigon to another thing that Rav Sajigon says at the very, very end of the piece that we have here. This is in section 12. Rav Sajigon tells us, he wants to tell us eight reasons why people become heretics, apikarsim, kofrim, people who deny the religion. Eight reasons why people deny the religion. The third reason that he counts here, the Hashlishis in paragraph 12, is because notos ha'adam l'malos ta'avotav. A person is drawn after his desires, his taiva. Machal, mishtam, mishkel, kinyan, food, drink, sexual relations, monetary acquisitions. V'humimahi olaso zeb bezrizis b'li machshav. And he chases after this. Rav Sajigon tells us in one line that a source of kfira is taiva. What does that mean? The reason we have doubt, and the reason why that doubt sometimes leads to actually rejecting religious life, is because of desire, taiva. What does that mean? Where does that come from? So I want us to learn very quickly here, I'm going to pass these around, a very famous piece from Rav Chanan Wasserman. Rav Chanan Wasserman, we know, studied by Rav Chaim Brisker. He perished in the Holocaust. He was killed. He was actually in America when the Holocaust broke out. And he went back. Some pass those around, guys. He actually went back to be with his students in Baranovich. And he died in Auschwitz, I believe, with his students. Rav Chanan Wasserman, we're familiar with him. He wrote Kovetz Shiurim, Kovetz Ha'aros, known as a giant in Lomdus. But he also wrote a very, very important, small little sefer called Kovetz Mamarim. Yay big. This big. Very small little sefer. In there, he begins with a very fundamental essay on Amunah. And I want to talk about that. I'm going to tell it to you outside. It's very Kedai reading. It's only a few pages. I gave you a few pages here. It's very Kedai reading. But I'm going to tell it to you outside because I want to keep moving because we have so many people, so many exciting people to learn about over the years, so I don't want to get bogged down in any one specific piece. But he asks a lot of very important questions. The first question he asks is, we're told, Chazal tell us, lo sasuru acharei levavchem.
You shouldn't stray after your heart. Lo sasur achrei levavchem. And the Gemara darshins, zuminus. This is heresy, apikarsis, to deny God. And he asks the very obvious question. Lo sasur achrei levavchem. Don't stray after your heart. That's kfira. What would you think it should say? Lo sasur achrei da'atchem. Heresy is a kilkul in logic. Becoming a heretic is because something's wrong with your thought process, not because of your heart. Why would Chazal connect it with our heart? Lo sasur acharei levavchem. Don't stray after your heart. It should say, don't stray after your mind that might think about things that are inappropriate or wrong. Isn't kfira a kilkul in das? It's not a kilkul in heart. Also, we have a lot of psukim that seem to connect chachma and our heart. Libi ra'a harbe chachma. My heart saw lots of chachma. What do you mean my heart saw? My mind saw lots of chachma. Sim lev means to pay attention to something. Sim lev. Put your heart to it. What do you mean my heart? My mind. Why do we find this connection between heart and intellect? That's his first question. Second question, a very, very famous question. The Rambam tells us there's a mitzvah to believe in Hashem. Everybody says mitzvah to believe in Hashem. How can you have a mitzvah to believe in something? If I believe in it, right, like for instance, this wall, this board right here is white. If you believe that the board is white, so I don't have to command you to believe it. You think it's white. You know? Okay, now I believe it's, you believe it's white. There's nothing to command. If you don't believe it's white, if you think it's green, so what am I going to do? Believe it's white. What am I supposed to do? I don't believe it's white. I think it's green. How can you command me to believe something is something? If it is, you don't need to command me. If it's not, what am I supposed to do? How can there be a mitzvah to believe? That's the second question. His third question is, every boy, when he turns 13, is chayav in all the mitzvos, including belief in God. Aristotle and all the great Greek philosophers, brilliant people, their whole lives they struggled with belief. How could it be shayach that we command a 13-year-old boy that he all of a sudden, he's 13 years old, a day ago he was just staring at Xbox every second. Now all of a sudden he's got to become the biggest philosopher and believe in God. How is that a logical, or how is that a fair requirement of a 13-year-old bar mitzvah boy? These are Rav Elchanan's questions. And Rav Elchanan, to answer these questions, begins with a premise. He quotes it from Chovos Levavos, which I hope, Bezus Hashem, we're going to meet. Rabbeinu Bach Ibn Pekuda, the author of Chovos Levavos, we're going to meet him next week, Bezus Hashem. But in Shara Yichud, Chovos Levavos tells us, he gives the argument for belief in God from design, as it's referred to nowadays. The belief in God from design. What does that mean, the belief from design? So he tells us that if you would walk into a room and you would see a beautiful painting on the wall, beautiful painting on the wall, and you asked me who painted that. And I said, oh, nobody painted it. I actually walked in here and some fool left his paint on the floor. I tripped over it. The paint went flying up on the wall, and that's what came out, that beautiful Mona Lisa right over there. So, obviously, you would laugh and say that that's a joke, because it's impossible, all that detail, that can come accidentally. And he says it's true that everything that we see that has fine detail was obviously created by something. So how can it be that someone thinks that the world, with infinite and infinite intricacies, can come just randomly? And he quotes, I believe he quotes, there's a famous, the Kuzari, I think, writes that there was a philosopher who didn't believe in God, and he was writing poetry, and he got up to the last line of the poem and he couldn't think of the good line for the last line, a rhyming line that really hit the point. So he went out for a walk, and when he came back, there was an old rabbi sitting there, and there was a beautiful line filled in. It had the perfect meter, right? Remember from poetry class, perfect meter and perfect, what else? It rhymed perfectly. It was a perfect line. And he said, oh, how'd this happen? And the rabbi said, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I knocked over the ink. That's what came out. He said, what is that, a joke? Besides the fact the letters are perfect, it rhymes perfectly, the meter is perfect. And the rabbi said, so how do you believe that the world just came randomly? This is the argument from design, that the fact that the world is so intricate is mind-blowing and obviously testifies to the fact that there's someone who created the world. This is in Kovetz Mamar on page Yud Beis. On the bottom right. Eich efsher, in the brackets. Leben das lomar al habriya kula shenasis me'aleha. How can anyone think that it happened on its own?
Achareish anu roim al kol psia, every single step, simane chachma amuka adein tachlis. We see such depth of brilliance in the world. It says this whole thing is like a medrash. It says on the next page. A min, maisa sheba min echad Rabbi Akiva. A heretic once came to Rabbi Akiva. Amalo amin Rabbi Akiva, mi baras ha'olam. Amalo Rabbi Akiva ha'kadosh baruch hu. Who created the world? Rabbi Akiva said Hashem. The min said, prove it to me. Amar lo Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva said, okay, who made your sweater? Amar hamin, oreg. Obviously some, you know, nowadays it would be like some sweatshop in China. But he didn't say that. He said, oh, some weaver made my sweater. Amar lo Rabbi Akiva, hareini davar barur, prove it to me. Ukalashin hazam Rabbi Akiva l'talmidav. Kishem shah talis me'ida al ha'oreg, just like the talis is the greatest proof that there was some manufacturer of the talis. The hadelis me'idal on nagar, and the door is made on the carpenter. The habayis made al habanai, and the house is made. It's proof that there was an architect and a builder. Kacha olam made al HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So to the world is made on HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
He says the reason why we don't necessarily feel this is because we were born a long time ago, and we saw sunsets our whole life growing up as a kid, and we weren't smart enough to ask about them. Imagine a kid comes out of the womb and he's got full intellectual cognition. And out of the womb, he starts looking around and he's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. The milk and the heat and how the sun rises and sunsets and the ocean and gravity and everything works. But we, our whole lives, without ever paying attention to it, we're used to all of these processes working. So by the time we come of age and we have a little bit of intellect, these are all pashut already that they work. So for us, it's not mind-blowing. But if a person would actually take a step back and look at the intricacies of the world, so it would be pashut to him that there was someone who created the world. So Rav Elchanan begins to answer the question by saying, quoting the Rav Chovas Lavovas, quoting this Medrash, that it's pashut. Amuna is pashut. We're coming from a total opposite extreme now from a second. Instead of having to figure out and prove Amuna, Rav Elchanan comes from the opposite extreme. He says Amuna is pashut. The question is not why should I believe. The question rather is, how can there be people who don't believe? And Rav Elchanan begins to answer this question based on the concept of Shochad. Rav Elchanan tells us that we have a concept called Shochad. Meaning? What's Shochad? Bribe. The halacha is that even a pruta, if a person receives a pruta from another person, he can't be a judge from him. A penny? Why, a penny is going to really affect the way I relate to him? Even Moshe and Aaron, if Moshe and Aaron got a penny from someone, they wouldn't be allowed to be a judge. Why? Because it's part of the physiological makeup of a person, psychological makeup of a person, that if the smallest little bribe is able to affect how a person thinks. And Rav Elchanan tells us, going on to the next page, that all human beings have a tremendous bribe. A bribe that's trying to convince them not to believe in God. And that bribe is called desire. There are so many great, exciting, pleasurable desires out there in the world. And what seems to be standing against those desires is a halachic system. Amuna in God. If I believe in God and I believe I'm here for a purpose, it means I can't just do whatever I want. I can't eat whatever I want. I can't sleep with whoever I want. I can't just be hefker and run around and do whatever I want. I have to actually answer to someone. And that is a tremendous strain and burden on a person who wants to indulge in so many great things that there are to indulge in. And Rav Elchanan says that that's a tremendous bribe on a person. I know we're done, so we're just going to read a line or two. On page Yud Dalad, Harei lefanecha olam shel hefker. The asama shalipcha chafet. You can do whatever you want. Ki bedavar she'adam mishulchad lo yachal lahakir es emes im hi neged ritzono sof. I can't even see. I can't even begin to accept that there's a God. Because if I accept that there's a God and there's a system out there that I need to follow, it's going to very severely limit what I'm able to do in the world. And that shochad, we don't even sense it. We don't feel it. We don't realize how much we are bribed by what we want to do. But Rav Elchanan tells us this is the greatest bribe that there is for a person that stands in the way of his amunah.